All right, so we are now in the second pasuk in the eighth perek of Megillat Esther. And before we begin, as we have been doing as late, L'shem b'fu shlema Shoshana Elka Bat Ataldina Shishtavu b'fu shlema b'miyav v'almenu. Okay, so this may be in some ways, in terms of the story, the single most important parak in the entire Megillah. Okay? There's that much that happens in it, and it's that significant. And also, last week I incorrectly cited L'Yehudim Hayta Ora V'Simcha as being part of parak Tishi'i, the ninth parak. It's actually the second to last verse in our parak. So there's quite a lot going on here. All right, let's begin. Pasuk Bet says, V'yasar ha-melech et taba'ato, asher ha'avir me'haman, v'yit na l'mordechai. Okay?
So what are you reading?
We are doing Perek Shmini.
Oh, okay. Perek Zion.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. There you go. Okay. So it says that the king took off his ring that he had taken from Haman, and v'yitnan, he gave it to Mordechai. Okay? So here, Mordechai takes on the guise of Yosef. Because what has Mordechai now become? Second. What has Mordechai now become, everybody, in terms of Jewish history? Mishnah Melech.
Second in command.
And who is he emulating?
Yosef.
Okay. Now, it wasn't that long ago that the king did the same exact behavior with Haman Yimach Shemo. Now, as everything changes, as everything turns, okay, now it's Mordechai who is, as we would say in 21st century language, is channeling Yosef. Okay. Now, v'tasem Esther et Mordechai al Beit Haman. Here you see the incredible power that Esther has, because prior to where we are at this moment, Esther was given, right, Beit Haman, and now Esther then hands it over to her uncle, maybe ex-husband, Mordechai. Okay. Now, so far, in a certain sense, based on what we did last week and the Malvim and everything else, this is really not something we wouldn't, in a sense, expect. So far, it seems like a natural order of things. Okay. And it seems to fit well with what's going on politically at this time. Simply looking at it from a power perspective. But now let's go to the next pasuk, where things are going to change. V'tosef Esther. And Esther continued. Almost continued from where? Well, she actually continues from Zion Gimel. Now, Zion Gimel, I don't know if any of you still have Perek Zion with you, but if you go back to Zion Gimel, if you have it, we have Esther telling the king, okay, that if she has found favor and so forth in the eyes of the king, okay, then Tov Titein Li Nafshi, save my life, B'Sheilati, okay, with my request, V'Amim, V'Ami rather, B'Vakashati, and my people's lives through my request. So, in a sense, we've had a lot that's happened in betwixt, but you'll see what I'm saying when we go to Pasuk Gimel. V'tosef Esther. Well, there was actually, if you look in Aleph, and you look in Bet, there's nothing to be added on at all. That's why we had to go all the way back to Zion Gimel. But now, Esther's continuing the same approach. V'tidaber Lifnei HaMelech, and she spoke before the king. So first verb that has to do with Ahasuerus and Esther is right here. Vatidaber. It's an active verb. In other words, the very first verb, Vatosef, he mosifa, would be the Ivrit. Esther mosifa, she added on to what she had done before, namely, pleading for her life. Now comes the actual moment of the pleading, or beseeching. Vatidaber lifnei amelech, she spoke before the king. Vatipol lifnei raglav, and she fell before his legs. In other words, she completely falls down on the ground, face on the ground, v'tefk, and she cried. So now, so far, guys, we have three verbs. I'm telling you, none of us would recognize this from the Megillah being read, only because who has time to really use a serious processing? But now we're up to the third verb, tidaber, tipol, v'tefk, and she was crying. And next verb, v'titchanen lo. Now, the correct English in modern terms is that she beseeched him. Here is one of those rare instances where Old English really helps. She besought him. In other words, she was seeking something on a supplicatory basis from him. And somehow the word beseech doesn't really capture it. Believe me, I stay as far away as I ever can from Old English. Mm-hmm. Forsooth, I do. But the idea here is, I think, very clear that she's seeking out something. So she besought something from him. Now, what was she asking? Okay, first time, it was very, very roundabout. Okay? Save me and my people. But it was really, as they say in Hebrew, min hatzad. It was sort of snuck in there. Now we're going to be extremely explicit. V'titchanen lo, she besought him, she beseeched him, la'avir, to remove, et ra'at haman ha'agagi. Look how Haman is described here. Very clear. Okay? He, in other words, it's almost like you think he was bad. You should have known his father. And that's why he's being called Haman Ha'agagi, all the way back to, of course, Amalek. The Eit Machshavato, it isn't enough to remove the evil of Haman in her request, but even what he sought to do. Asher chashav, that he desired, that he thought, al hayehudim. Okay, so this is what we would say again in 21st century terms, an upfront direct request. Let's take a look at that page I gave you from Reformer for a minute. I don't know exactly what page this is in Reformer's book, The Queen You Thought You Knew, because this is taken from the electronic Kindle version, and it doesn't give you actual pages. It tells you, you know, you're 20% into the book or something like that. But I don't own the physical text. I only own the electronic text. So if you look at the very top paragraph, where beginning with the words, at first, okay? Now, don't ask me how I remembered that this was here, because I don't remember how I knew. But somewhere in my mind I said, you know, Reformin discusses this very, very well. So I looked, Baruch Hashem, I found it. So he says, at first Esther tried just to annul the decree against the Jews. That is, she tried to oppose and thereby nullify the king's written decree. But whenever she tried to do this, she failed. Okay? So again, like I said, Perek Zayin Gimel, it's sort of indirect. And now that's what he's going to talk about. The first time she tried this was when she attempted to get the king to annul the decree in a somewhat backhanded fashion. In modern Hebrew, minatzat. Okay? Indirect. She had asked him to save her life by annulling Haman's decree. But the king didn't do that. Instead, what did he do, everyone? Saves her, kills Haman. But what's hanging out there? Clear as day.
The decree.
the decree. But he left in place Haman's edict, threatening the rest of the Jews. So, yeah, Esther's going to be saved, probably, but all of her people are going to be destroyed. Go ahead.
You know, saying that, you know, like when she was at the party, she said that he's trying to kill me, meaning like when you come and keep him, you kill me.
Right. But in Zion, he makes it very clear. I mean, at least at that point, okay, that's before we get into me, who's Avezahu. But at that exact moment, she's saying, save me and save my people.
Right, and here we're saying that they'll kill the people, but save Esther. But Esther's saying, no, it's either all or nothing.
Right, and in a sense, she's really putting herself out there, if that's what you're saying. In other words,
but he doesn't buy in.
How could I live if my people die? And Arlene made a point too, is that he's certainly willing to save her. Okay, and what will happen to the Jews will happen to the Jews. Until as she's going to raise the stakes here. And that's how we're going to get into the letter rating campaign that goes on with Mordechai and Esther. But we're not quite there yet. Now, here's
say the end of the story before we finish the beginning.
Correct. Now, here we are. If you go down to the third paragraph on the first page. Then later, Esther tried again. When does she try again?
Now.
Right now. That's why I'm bringing it in. This time, she made her plea forthrightly and directly asked the king to repeal the writ, okay, the edict, threatening her people. In so doing, she risked her life by boldly declaring her loyalty to her countrymen. Yet, as we know, once again, she fails. Okay, and let's see that in the text as we go into the next pasuk. Okay, so it says, "V'yoshed HaMelech le'Esther et sharbit hazahav." So the king put forth his golden scepter. Meanwhile, she's lying on the ground, right before him, completely at his mercy. But now it's, you know. I can't help but think Esther is our Wonder Woman, right? She v'taka, she gets up heroically, v'ta'amod, and she stands lifnei HaMelech. I mean, she's heroic, right? She, remember, Ahasuerus is no different than who? Haman or Henry VIII. And Henry VIII had a penchant before the guillotine to what? Behead his wives and so forth. Okay. Pasuk Hey. Now, watch how she formulates it, but still is denied. Vatomer. And she said, Im al HaMelech Tov. Well, if it's good for the king, which is basically what I call WIIFM. What's in it for me? If she wants to get buy-in from the king, she has to try to exercise the art of the deal, okay, which she's trying to do. If it's good for the king, in other words, if you're going to benefit, and obviously I can't imagine that she didn't say that with a big, big smile, okay? So if it's good for the king, number one. Two, v'imatzati chen lefanav. Clearly, she's playing what you might call the wife card. Is she manipulating him? Yes. Do I suggest trying this at home? Oh, no. Please don't. Okay? Is it healthy interaction? No. But is she doing it? Yes. V'kasher hadavar lifnei hamelech. Now, kasher doesn't mean it's under the OU. Kasher here means if it's proper and fitting, okay, before the king. So this is already three parts. Now, in case he missed v'imatzati chen lefanav, if I have found favor before him, speaking, you know, very respectfully, third person, what's the next thing she says? V'tova ani be'enav, and I'm good in the eye of the king. Which means, again, she's clearly using her feminine wiles and power, okay? And in this case, even though it's manipulative, okay, after all, what is she trying to do? Save the Jewish people.
It's a strategy,
okay? I don't think that in any way, shape, or form, even though she's acting like it on a certain level, as far as the king is concerned, I don't think we can look at her as a ditz. She's not. She's not. She's strategically successful. However, her answer is not what she gets. So she says all these different things and then says, Yikatev, let the king write. Lahashiv et ha-svarim, okay, to bring back the books, okay, that have gone out of Machashevet Haman, which means the statements of edicts. And again, in case you missed which Haman, Ben Hamadatta Ha'agagi, okay, tracing his lineage all the way back, of course, to Amalek. Asher Katav La'abedat Yehudim, who wrote to destroy the Jews. Asher B'chol Medinot HaMelech. So in other words, even though I'm going to survive, I can't survive that way. Okay? And now she's going to stress that point. But before we do this, the Malbim, I'm just going to say the Malbim on the outside here. The Malbim says, in this instance, there's no busha that would possibly accrue to Ahasuerus by rescinding his edict. Why? The edict has not been read yet. It sort of was time-stamped. Read this on such and such a day. So according to the Malbim, if it's rescinded, right, the king will not lose any of his macho self-image. But remember, the macho self-image is based on what, everybody? Insecurity. Okay? Because anyone has to tell you how great they are, you know, by definition, is not great. Okay? So the Malbim says even that's going to be intact because nobody knows it as of yet. So now she continues. So, go ahead.
If nobody knew about it, how did the Jews know?
Because what role, according to the Gemara, was Mordechai heading at this point? What role did he have? He's the head of the Sanhedrin.
Right.
Okay. So we certainly had a way of getting the word out to our own people.
No, but I mean, nobody knew about it. He said it was in a sealed letter that nobody read.
But the Jews knew about it. We knew about it.
Mordechai knew it. And he told the Sanhedrin, and the Sanhedrin told the people, and the people told the people, and the people told the people.
How did the Jews know?
Mordechai knew.
Oh.
He sat in the gates.
Oh, he was there when the rule, you know, was released. Remember it said, in the year Shushan Hayata Nevocha, everything was confused when it went out. Because remember we said, Early, I don't know if you were at the shir, that particular shir, but early on, maybe it was the second parak, third parak, okay? After Haman comes on the scene, and the whole money thing goes down and all of that. So at that point, people knew, some people knew anyway, that very negative things were about to happen to the Jews. But the actual edict per se had not yet been revealed, okay? And you know, it says Yer Shushan Hayta Nevocha. That's the lashon that's used. Okay, that's what we're up to. Now, at this point, Esther makes a further statement. In other words, basically, she's going to say, "And even if I could live, I can't. I can't live without my people." Ki echa. Now, ki echa sounds like what word?
Echa.
And when it's leaned, the Baal Kore uses a truck from Echa. So she says, Ki Echecha Uchal. How can I continue? V'ra'iti, and see. B'ra'a, the evil, Asher Yimtza et Ami, that will befall my people. V'Echecha Uchal V'ra'iti. And how can I continue and see? B'avdan Muladati, the destruction, the death of my kindred. So basically, the idea here is she's she's broadcasting to Ahasuerus so that she can't go on. She can't continue. That it's all very well and good that you want to save my life on a personal basis, but without my people, I'm truly nothing. Okay? Now, what we see here at this point in time is that if you go all the way to the end of the first paragraph, we on the right-hand side. So, the king denied a request. Now, why? Does everyone remember why? Why?
Because
it's Persian law. Okay, so we're getting closer and closer to that. So now, we're going to have a very, very formal statement. Okay? Pasuk Zayin. And you're going to see why it's so formal. Vayomar ha-melech ha-chashverosh. Did anybody have any doubt who the melech was? So each time we have these formalities, because something very formal is going to be stated. So Vayomar ha-melech ha-chashverosh le-Esther ha-melka. Again, it could have said Esther or Hamalka. Ula Mordechai ha-yudi. In case you had any doubt, right, about what I'm suggesting.
Wouldn't it say Mordechai the second in command, like it did with Haman?
Very good. So that's a very good question. I like the question. It's very insightful. So call like a vote. It reminds me very much of the idea of Yaakov's name being changed to Yisrael. However, even though Yaakov's name is changed to Yisrael, right?
Still used.
And there's a whole analysis in all the Mefarshim. Why is it sometimes Yisrael? And why is it Yaakov? Right? So, for example, we don't say Shema Yaakov, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, do we? Say Shema Yisrael. Okay? But we say, or at least Bilam says, okay, and Ma Tovu Olecha, Mishkanatecha, Mishkanatecha, Yisrael. So right there in that,
right? We say Yaakov.
Yeah. Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. And you would have expected after the name is changed. So, answering your question. With the Yehudim, with the Jews, clearly in the crosshairs, because the edict has not been removed, is Mordechai more at this exact fateful moment in time, Mordechai Yehudi or Mordechai Mishnah LaMelech?
Was Mordechai safe, though, regardless?
Say again?
Was Mordechai safe regardless, like Esther was safe, even if the rest of the...
It's a very good question.
Not as good as hers, then.
No, it's an excellent question.
My mom's not here right now.
I love the question, because there's historical precedent for your question, much later with the Abarbanel. So you might, some of you may remember me mentioning this. The year is 1492. And a lot more happened, ladies, than Columbus sailing the ocean blue with Anina the Pinta de Santa Maria, etc. A lot more happened. What happens in 1492? Spanish expulsion. Okay? All of Spanish Jewry is given a choice to either convert
or leave.
And?
Or die.
Okay, well, convert, leave. But if you stay and you don't convert,
you die.
Not you, God forbid, but you die. Okay? So, of course, that's where Jews who were pretending to be Christians came from. We never called ourselves Muranos. You know what Muranos means in Spanish?
Hidden or secret, right?
So okay, well, it also means pigs.
It's derogatory.
Oh.
It means pigs. It's similar to many of the other things that we're all too familiar with from Eastern European days, okay? It's always very similar to you false crypto-Christian kind of thing, okay? That's what the Inquisition called us. All right. Now, I told you all that to tell you this. One Jewish family, however, was given stay permission. And you don't have to convert the apartment now. Because the king needed a good accountant.
Oh, an accountant.
Financier.
Okay. Financier. Okay? Basically, the 1492, the 15th century version of an MBA. Okay? Remember, almost no one in the 15th century could read, let alone handle finances, okay, in a legitimate, honest way. Okay? So that's why it's such a good question. All right? So if you say that Ahasuerus, by this point, recognizes Mordechai's utility, Ulai, Mordechai would have survived. If you say that perhaps it's all very nice that he's the Mishnah Melech, but he's still a relatively unknown entity, even though he had saved Ahasuerus's life, but of course Ahasuerus certainly lived on the level of what did you do for me today? He was a hedonistic, sybaritic individual, right? So maybe not. We don't know. But it's a great question. You guys are such good.
As his uncle, was he sort of maybe allowed him to?
Did he know that he was the uncle?
Yeah. Well, yeah. But
this time, I think
well, last week we said the Ibn Ezra said that. Because if you look in that, look in the Pasuk Aleph, look at the end of it. It says, Ki higida Esther Mahula. So the Ibn Ezra said, no, they really didn't say that he was her husband. Because, you know, that would have been very Henry VIII, you know, level kind of behavior after that. So he said, oh, he's my uncle. You know, my uncle. Okay. Now, as we see that she's not successful, she tries very hard. But here's the answer that we get. Hine, which is now back to Pasuk Zion. Hine, Beit Haman Natati LeEsther. So, whoa, guys. Hold on here. I've done my bit. I've been a good king. I gave the entire house of Haman to Esther. And again, remember, we're talking about this palatial estate. Probably looks something like one of the English manners that you see in all the period pieces, right? It goes on, you know, like endless amounts of land, you know, etc. V'yoto talu al ha'etz, right? And I hung him on the gallows. No, what more do you want from me? And I even publicized why I did it. Al asher shalach yado b'yehudim, because he was about to kill Jews. No. What kind of answer is that? It's like the worst kind of apology, which goes something along this. Doesn't matter what it is. I'm sorry if you think I did X. And if you're hurt, I apologize. That doesn't work. We all know that doesn't work. Okay? Never did, never will. Now, he kind of gave that answer. She's saying, save us, save us, save us, save us, save us. And he replies, look what I did. This is sort of like the biggest non sequitur, because think about it in terms of space travel. So if you want to send something to Mars, and on Earth it's off only a half of an inch, does that sound, as we would say, very gefährlich? No, but what happens to that half an inch as it goes thousands and hundreds of thousands of miles into space? What happens?
That's right.
That half an inch is not a half an inch anymore, is it? It's a half an inch here, but the trajectory makes it bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. So you've got a $500 trillion satellite that misses Mars by how far? Hundreds of miles. So basically, that's the kind of answer Ahasuerus gives Esther. Okay? Save me, save me, save me, save me. Look what I've done.
I gave you a house.
Right? I gave you a house. I was willing to give you half a kingdom. But she goes, this really doesn't help if everyone I care about dies. Okay? Go ahead, I can't hear it. What?
A false sense of his personality wouldn't be dealt with later.
Yeah.
So he's probably okay with, you know, thinking that that's what she wants to hear.
Right.
Well, he doesn't want to embarrass himself by taking back something that he sent out.
Ah. But it's more than that. It's not a matter of personal embarrassment. It turns out it's the law of the land that the king cannot rescind what he's sent out.
You think the king could have that power?
Couldn't the king rescind?
Couldn't he have an executive order and do it?
One of my favorite current expressions. The answer is theoretically yes, even if you don't necessarily have the Supreme Court in your pocket. Okay? But practically, let's remember Ahasuerus's roots.
He was a stable boy.
A stable boy.
Not very savvy.
Not very savvy. And very, very much what they say. I think the word in Yiddish is he's a bulvan, right? He's a vulgarian, and everybody distrusts him in the aristocracy. So if he breaks one of the rules that has been in the Persian kingdom, how's that going to look publicly? They're not going to think he's truly deserving of being the king, because after all, how do you do that? So if you turn over Rav Forman's page, so we have this. The last thing said, in other words, rather than futilely pleading with the king to annul a written decree, the king did not want to annul. She instead did the opposite. And that's what we're coming to in Pasuk Chet, which, from the perspective of the story, Chet may well be the single most important Pasuk in the entire story. I really mean that. Let's see how Rav Forman suggests its importance may well be. So, she realizes, okay, nothing I've done, including falling at his feet, right? I'm all dolled up. I look like $1 million. I fell at his feet. And instead, what does he do? He gives me a history lesson. That's not helping. So, here's her new strategy. Rav Forman says, she left that decree in place and concentrated instead on affirming a second contradictory decree of the king. So in other words, is it going to be on the books? I mean, there's weird laws on the books. There are still upstate municipalities in New York where it is illegal in that particular town to kiss one's wife in public on Sunday. Okay? Certainly it was a different world, I think you'd all agree. Okay? Monday, I guess, was okay. Sunday was not allowed. Okay? So she's going to leave. She realizes, I can't nullify this decree. It's not going to happen. But what I can do is see if there's something that can be done. All of my smiles, all of my guile, all of my manipulation, maybe something can happen. And that's what we're going to see. Remember, the king had allowed her and Mordechai to write what they pleased concerning the Jews. Okay? By itself, that wasn't much. What good is writing anything when the authorization for a pogrom to destroy you is set in stone? But now, Mordechai and Esther joined forces. Let's remember how it went. Who was the first strategist?
Mordechai.
Who then took over as
Esther.
And now, it's Mordechai and Esther working together. Two heads are better than one. Okay? Now, that's what we're going to do now. Let's take a look. Go to Pasuk Chet. Here's where it gets unbelievably exciting. The 10. So the king says, you know, at the end of the Pasuk, I can't do anything about what I said. Right? That's the last part of the Pasuk. Let me read the last part first, which is not the usual way to read it, but Ki katav asher nichtav b'shem ha-melech v'nachton b'tabat ha-melech ein la-hashiv. Because any writing that has gone out, that it was written in the name of the king, okay, and it was sealed with the king's signet ring, you can't take back. So, since that's the law of the land, look at where it says now. Ve'atem kitfu al Yehudim. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to make a compromise. Let's make a deal. I'm going to make a compromise. Kitfu al Yehudim, Kitov Beinechem B'Shem HaMelech. You've got carte blanche, or whatever it would be in Persian, okay? Or Farsi, whatever they spoke in those days, okay? You've got carte blanche. Do whatever you want. Beinechem B'Shem HaMelech, in my name. You don't even talk about himself. He's in the, you know, name of the king. Okay? V'chitmu, and seal. Notice he's saying it in what? All this is in Lashon Rabbim. Kitvu, chitmu. Who's the kitvu and the chitmu referring to?
Mordechai and Esther.
Mordechai and Esther are working hand in glove. B'taba'at HaMelech. Do it in the king's signet ring, which can't be rescinded. So it's really, the end of the pasuk is a double entendre. It's a double entendre. Why is it a double entendre? What I did before, I can't nullify. But what you're going to do in my name also can't be nullified. That's the deep insight of Rav Forman. Okay? That he says, look how he says it again. Remember the king, this is page 2, which looks like this. So, remember, the king had allowed her and Mordechai to write what they pleased concerning the Jews. By itself, wasn't such a big deal. Let's skip down. But Mordechai and Esther weren't daunted. Using the king's license, they issued a second decree in the name of the king that gave the Jews the right to go on the offensive. Then they focused their efforts on affirming that decree to every extent possible. So, as he says in his last paragraph, I'll just say, last statement, I'll say it on the outside, he was able to, if you don't mind the expression too much, do a little bit of fake news. And in doing so, he was able to convince everybody what? That the king was behind the protection of who? The Jews. Don't want to mess with those Jews. Let's go weiter. Let's see what he says. So, v'atem kitvu ha-Yehudim, right? Go and write anything you want. So, Esther and Mordechai were not challenged in any fashion. And what do they do right away? V'yikru sofrei ha-melech. They called for the scribes of the king. Beitahi. At that moment. In other words, not even a second is wasted.
They don't want to change their mind.
Right. For those of you, right, who have children that have ever gone through shiduchim, what does everyone always say? Don't wait a moment on a possible shidduch, because you never know. So there are certain things where time is of the essence. This is one of them. Okay? V'yikru sofrei ha-melech be'et ahi. At that moment, b'chodesh ha-shlishi, in the third month, hu chodesh Sivan. Alright, the month of Sivan, which we're in right now. B'shlosha v'esrim bo. That's not where we're not. Alright, v'katev. Okay, k'chol asher tziva Mordechai. Now here, Mordechai steps back into the fuller role. Why? Who is the more savvy politician?
Esther.
She was a better strategist with the king. Who was the better politician?
Mordechai.
Right. Who knew how to drain the swamp best? Mordechai. Okay. Who knew how to protect the Jews the best? After all, what was he?
Head of the Sanhedrin.
Mishnah LeMelech. In touch with, you know, all the incoming emails. He knew everything that was going on. Okay? So v'katev k'chol asher tziva Mordechai. Big switch here. El ha-Yehudim. And they wrote down everything that Mordechai commanded regarding the Jews. V'el, here's one of our favorite words, el ha-ach shedar panim, the satraps. Now the satraps sounds like something you call you're exterminated for. We have satraps and we got to get rid of. No, satraps are some kind of relatively low level couriers, people that were perhaps of the...
Peons?
They what?
Like peons?
No, they weren't peons. They were up there in the aristocracy, uh-huh. But not quite as high as the next groups. V'hapachot, the governors, v'sarei ha-medinot, and the princes. So they were aristocracy. I guess maybe dukes, okay, kind of thing. Okay, earls, right? Asher mehodu v'ad kush. From India to Kush, perhaps Ethiopia. Sheva v'asrim me'am medina. Okay, 127 countries, right? Just like we have in the very first pasuk, right? Medino medina, each country and country, kikiktava, according to its script, like whether it was Sanskrit, Phoenician, whatever it might have been, v'am v'am, kiloshano, and each people according to their language, v'el ha-yehudim, kikiktava, kiloshano. You bet your bottom dollar it was written in what?
Hebrew.
Okay. Now, we already said a minute ago, v'yikatev. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
But look what it says in Yud.
V'yikhtov.
V'yikhtov. Whoa. Mm-hmm. What?
That's past tense.
It is. Because it is v'yikhtov hukatav. Correct. But my point is, and the point is that it's emphasis.
It's also, it's not plural.
Correct. Now it's single. That's very good. Excellent. Everything was written b'shem, because it's referring now to the melech. It was written in the name of the melech. Okay? But the key is, before it was yiktavu v'yikatev, and now it's v'yiktov. Okay, again, the same idea that what? Emphasis. Who's doing all the emphasis? Mordechai and Esther. Okay, they're building a whole castle. Now, it might be a castle built on sand, because does the king per se really care about the Jewish people?
No.
But the whole thing is, it's the news cycle. Let's get the news cycle to work for us. Let's get everyone to believe it. Remember, if you say something often enough, what happens?
People believe it.
Okay? So you can see the sophisticated political machinations to save our people that Mordechai is doing. So, V'yiktov b'shem ha-melech Achashverosh, it was written in the name of the king Achashverosh, and that's why it's in the singular. V'yachtom, and again, it was sealed. B'tabat ha-melech, with the king's signet ring. V'yisholach svarim, and these books, which of course really means what? Statements of edicts, right? Were sent. Now here we get some really unusual words here. Biyad haratzim, okay, basusim, the couriers, the runners on horseback. Now here's really very strange language here. Rochve harechesh ha'achash deranim, which means, you're not going to believe it, riders of swift mules. Bnei har. Well, what's a mule?
It's an ox and horse.
A donkey.
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a donkey and horse hybrid. So, good question. Look what's good. How were they so swift? Look what it says. Bnei haramachim. They were mules that were born of mares. Father was a donkey, which gave it strength. The mother is a
horse.
Swift,
horse.
Fast horse. So therefore you have fast mules. Isn't that interesting?
So if it's a female mule and a male donkey, then they're not a male horse, then they're not fast.
It might, well, apparently, at least their understanding at about 6 centuries before the Common Era, right? Apparently that was it. In other words, you want a fast mule? Check out the mom.
Well, maybe they also had very fast horses there.
Indeed. Okay. All right. Now, that's, so this goes out all over. Asher natan ha-melech Yehudim. All right? That everybody knew that the king had given this on behalf of the Jews. Asher b'chol ir v'ir. Okay? He gave permission to the Jews in each and every city. Lehi kahel, to gather together. That's the word kehilah, right? To gather together. And what permission were we given everybody? La'amod anavsham. The Jews were given the permission to stand for their souls. To do what? Lahashmid. Everything that Haman had wanted to do, we're going to now be able to do against our enemies. Lahashmid, to destroy. Laharog, to kill. Okay? Laabed, to wipe out. Et kol chel am, all of the marauding armies, okay, umedina, of the peoples and the countries, if and only if, hatsarim, that, remember, what's a tsar again? We did this several times. An active enemy. These were active enemies of the Jews, hatsarim otam, taf v'nashim, who were ready, willing, and able to murder men, women, and children. Okay? And not only in this case were we given permission to defend ourselves, ushlal alam lavos, we could also take their wealth, just as Esther had taken Haman's wealth. True, through a fiat of the king, okay? But nonetheless, that's what took place. Okay? So next week, in Mir Tzashim, because I hate rushing, because then we don't get great questions. Okay? Next week we'll continue with Yud Bet. We're going to finish Perachet. We'll go on to Tet. Now, Tet is all the mitzvot of Purim. Okay? But we're almost done with what you and I consider the story, the narrative, the drama that really is part of the greatest story ever told. Thank you very much for inspiring me.